Next Step 644, October 8th, 2020.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vodskin. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vodskin's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Completely and totally infuriating, upsetting, disgusting. What can I tell you? I hate to admit that. And the only thing that's keeping me up, right now, is knowing that those young children are at the front line. Yes, children, 18, 19, 20-year-olds, holding back the enemy from coming in and taking over, using a back door. That's what this is, you know? It's a back door to genocide. I'm sorry. You know what I'm talking about. We're talking about Artsakh. Just about 2 weeks ago, almost 2 weeks, 10 days ago, the Turks, just say it straight out, right? The Azeris, they came and they came across the border and started hitting at Armenians, Armenian targets, our land, and they were backed by the Turkish army, by the Turkish government. And you know, here in America, what we talk about? We talk about systemic racism. That's a word that's been thrown around quite liberally here in America. Systemic racism. That racism really is institutionalized. You know, it comes down to the government doesn't want certain people because of skin color, because of ethnic background. They don't want them to move ahead or take advantage of government offerings. Yeah, if there's scholarships, if there's housing, they'll keep them out. Yeah, we're finding out about that, systemic racism. Guess what? In Armenia right now, on that border, it's called systemic racism upped. On steroids, it's called genocide. Yeah, the Turks want to conduct a genocide, which they started in 1915, a systematic annihilation of a group of people and everything that defines them as a group of people. And this is ordered by the government. In other words, when it's an order, it's a law. So if you don't kill Armenians, you're working against the law. Yeah, that's how simple it is. Okay, so in 1915, they tried. They took most of our lands. We have this small little area called Armenia and a little enclave that was later given. Well, it becomes an enclave because it was given to the Azeris, 1923, I think it was. Before that, there were no Azeris, you know. And you go to this land, Artsakh, and all you see is just beautiful, beautiful structures. Beautiful people, beautiful spirit, and there's no trace of Turks, there's no trace of Azeris. It's like, you know, 80% is Armenian people, but I mean, when I say no trace, like there's nothing from antiquity that identifies it with Turks. In fact, there's buildings, there's structures from the 6th, I think 4th century, you know, 6th century, 7th century. Armenian writing, and it's just beautiful, peaceful people. In fact, so peaceful that, believe it or not, 2 years ago, that these people said, we have a minority here that is Muslim, and they renovated the mosque. Yeah, true story. They renovated the mosque in Artsakh so that their neighbor Muslim brothers can have a place to come and worship. And now they're just like attacking, attacking. That's the payback. Yeah, that's the payback, right, for doing something good. Yeah, and this morning, they bombed, they shelled one of the most beautiful structures over there in Shushi. The Ghazan Chechuts. It just, I'm speechless. I've got pictures on my screen right now, and just Ghazan Chechuts. It is just a beautiful, holy place. The first time I was there, we were there in 2014, part of a pilgrimage that we organized on the 99th year of the genocide. It was going back to our roots. We went to this place, just amazing, amazing. It's called, we labeled it as a vortex. It's like this place where all spirituality comes together. And they bombed it. They bombed it this morning. I mean, yeah, they know what's going to hurt us, right? They know what's going to hurt us. It's like a tactic. It's warfare. Anyway, this is in Shushi. And that's what I was saying earlier. It's a backdoor to genocide. So the Turks, instead of coming into Armenia, because if they come into Armenia politically, there's a treaty with Russia, and the Armenians can call in Russia, and they could fire upon them. So the Turks go to their ally, their friend, their same people, by the way, Azerbaijan, and they come in through Azerbaijan and start attacking the Armenians. And basically want to finish off what they started in 1915. It's genocide. It's a systematic program of annihilating a people and those things that define those people, namely the church. And here's the rub. Just 3 months ago, we saw Hagia Sophia in Istanbul being overtaken by the Turks. And the world just watched on, and people complained. But they did it. They got away with it. And now they want to do the same in Armenia. They want to do it, and this is part of this pan-Turkism, right? From the Black Sea to the Caspian Sea. All one Turkish nation. And there's this small little link in this chain that belongs to Armenia. Has always been part of Armenia, and they just figure it's the easiest thing. Let me share with you some things today, because I know you can get all of this information on various sites, and we will populate our show notes today with some links that you may want to take a closer look at. And I'm not here to talk about the politics of it, because frankly, I believe that the politics will not lead us to the peace. There has to be a higher understanding and a higher consciousness that will lead us to peace. And I want to share with you some ideas, some that I just vaguely spoke about in my sermon last Sunday at the cathedral. I'll have a link on today's show notes. It was primarily in Armenian. But I want to share with you some basic concepts, because I know that there's this feeling of hopelessness. Helplessness, more than hopelessness. That helplessness is knowing that there's something going on and not being able to help, not being able to reach out, and feeling stuck that you can't. What can you do? Yeah, your first inclination is let's go out there and let's help. What are you going to do over there, you know? Do you know the land? Do you know the things? And then you realize that, well, maybe there are some other things that I can do. I can do sitting behind a computer. I can do collecting things, collecting donations, and start sending it over. Most importantly, I think today is the need for us to enlighten people, get into the consciousness of people. And that's where we begin today, because I want to start off with the idea of the shadows. And go through this with me, because I think it's important. It's basically an answer. It's a way of looking at it, understanding, and arriving at a higher consciousness of what is necessary today and what you can do. We claim to be this first Christian nation, and what can we do, okay? And I don't want to be saying, hey, I told you so, because we've been putting up that. How many times have you heard me just here talking about leveraging love, right? Talking about the importance of being to use the power of love that Christ gives us. And here we are, right, you know, a little bit too late. Yeah, we talked about it for so long, but we couldn't sell it. We couldn't sell that idea. And, you know, I guess the company is good. Neither could Jesus, right? Neither could Jesus sell the idea that love is more powerful than all the hate. Martin Luther King tried to do it, right? That we can overcome with the power of love. We're in good company, and here we see it, and it's already like they're killing. And I know that now we're confronted with the blood. And I mentioned a few minutes ago that these kids are on the front line. Those of you who were in a church, I know here in the Western Diocese, and I'm assuming throughout the world, all churches remembered the names of the martyrs, those first people who fell in Artsakh. And there were something like 230 names. One by one, we read them in church with the ringing of the bell. And there was a very difficult moment for me in that I had just finished consecrating the bread and the wine into the body and the blood. And hearing these names, I turned to the Blessed Sacrament in prayer. And you know how your eyes, like sometimes they just unfocus. They come out of focus for a moment. And I was just absorbed in that moment, and I lost focus on the sacrament. And I just saw the drips of blood coming from the Blessed Sacrament. They're just dripping. And my heart and my thoughts went to these children that are on the front line, dripping blood, innocent blood, because these barbarians, you know, I know the temptation is to call them by names of animals, pigs and everything, but it's an insult to the animal. It really is. These barbarians, these Turks, by the way, that's a Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut made that reference in Bluebeard. If you haven't read that, I highly recommend it. It's about a guy, a genocide survivor, who refers to people that he doesn't agree with as Turks. Basically, that's the biggest insult that you can give to somebody. Not mine, Kurt Vonnegut, okay? Yeah, the writer. So I'm there, and I'm absorbed in the moment and in meditation, and I see this blood dripping, and I think of our Lord's blood at the crucifixion and the innocence of that blood, and now being spread on these children who are giving their lives. And I start my thought process today with a reading from the Gospel of John. And this comes to us from John chapter 3, Jesus talking. He says, "This is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light, and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed. But he who does the truth comes to the light, that his deeds may be clearly seen that they have been done in God." Now, Christ talking about this condemnation, the darkness. This is where this evil is. Evil takes place in darkness. And I want to just share with you what I went through personally last week, because every night of the week we had church services, and I thought it was just so beautiful that we were offering a spiritual outlet. Because I know people are in this helplessness mode right now. What do you do? And with these prayer meetings, we at least had an opportunity to vent, whatever that vent may be, and everyone to his conscience. I'm sure some people said, what kind of God are you that you're allowing these things to happen? And I'm sure many people said, I'm looking for that strength, O Lord. And that's what I found, a strength that gets me going right now, is knowing that there's that strength on that front line, and knowing that our troops stand there with that same faith. I mean, I'm going to put please, like I said earlier, check out the show notes. I'll populate it with some stuff. There's a very, very good small little video clip of a deacon named Hadad who was on the front lines, and he was wounded, and he talks candidly. It's in Armenian, but try to get it translated. And he's on that front line. And at the end of this video, when they talk to him, he's wounded. He's in the hospital. And he says, you know, people say that we will win. He says, I think we already have. And he's talking about the spirit. The spirit. And it goes back to Vartanants, you know. You can kill people, but you can't kill that spirit. That's what continues. And I'm these are the things that keep me going. I'm just sharing it with you. So last week we had these prayer evenings and people reacted. And I thought to myself, you know, from the time of Vartanants, you know, you always had the church right next to it. You have a Revontieretz. That's the beauty of Vartanants. That's one of those mystical realities that happens. You don't know how, but it's happened here in America. The two coasts, the cathedrals on two coasts of the North American continent. One is named Saint Vartan, and the other one is named Saint Revont, Leon. And it's interesting. Hey, you couldn't plan it like this. And yet this is what it is. This is what the articles of faith point us to. The protection with state and spirit and church. And so this church has been there with us through our whole journey. And that church has a responsibility to proclaim what I just read. In other words, the light. You cannot live in that darkness. In fact, so much so that one of our Catholicoses, this is like 20 years after the genocide, 1942, he proclaims in America, he was the primate of the Eastern Diocese, after which he went and became Catholicos of the See of Cilicia. This is Archbishop Karekin Hovsepian. And yes, he became Karekin the First of Cilicia. And he was, he proclaimed 1942 October as Cultural Month. Important, because you have a group of people now living in diaspora because they were forced out of their homeland, and you've got Cultural Month. In other words, he saw it important that the Armenians understand who they were, the articles of faith that brought them there. And this is very important for us today to understand that the church and the state have this symbiotic relationship throughout history. Until when? Until, well, we didn't have the freedom, right? And so this Catholicos did this because as Armenians, we were living inside of the Soviet Union. 1920, Armenia became one of the republics of the Soviet Union. And we didn't have that exact freedom, and many of the church leaders had to deal with it. Most memorably and notably was His Holiness Vazgen I, who figured out a way of keeping that faith alive inside of that Soviet Union, inside of Soviet Armenia. But still the tensions were there. Until 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed. And Armenians now started expressing themselves, and there was the freedom. And now listen carefully what happened. In that freedom, we saw the goodness of freedom expressed in capitalism rather than understanding how important freedom is to the emotion and the faith. So all of a sudden, Arminians started defining themselves with the articles of that freedom rather than the freedom. Okay? And this, you could see this most prominently here in the Los Angeles area. How many cars they had, what type of cars being understood as cars. And this is, you can ask anybody on the street, any Arminian on the street, they'll tell you. 1990s, it was, if you had a Mercedes. In the early 2000s, it had to be a BMW. Today, it's Tesla. That's the way they will decide where you are on that scale of success. Houses. How many houses do you have? Do you have one by the beach? Do you have one up in the mountains? And what happens is all of a sudden we forgot. We forgot where we came from. So in 1994, when the Rwandan genocide happened, Armenians were quiet about it. Armenians who were the first to experience genocide in that century were quiet about Rwanda. Yeah, this is after freedom. Well, you can argue that, yeah, Armenia was going through some difficult times those first few years. Absolutely. Absolutely. But what happens in 2003? And not only in Armenia, but with the diasporan Armenians. Darfur. Darfur, and where are the Armenians in Darfur? I mean, in relation to Darfur, talking about it, expressing something about that event. Genocide. And you know, if you've been listening to the Next Step, you know that that's one of the cornerstones on how we started with In His Shoes. That was the whole idea of In His Shoes. Darfur was happening and we were staying quiet and we said, we can't do that. We've got to be out there. And I'm very pleased that we were able to do something. Not enough, but we did it. At least we weren't silent. A small group of people. And then the darkness continues. This is darkness, right? This is darkness. And in the darkness, the evil does its deed, right? And in that darkness, we saw Hagia Sophia. We saw this shrine, this architectural marvel, but this holy shrine being converted into a mosque. When I saw it, I mean, it took me back to being in Gars, and a pilgrimage I made to the ancient Armenian ancestral lands. Gars was one of the few places that I could not walk into that structure. To me, it was a church. It had been converted into a mosque. I literally got sick and had to stand outside. I couldn't get in there. And, you know, it's horrible because you realize that it's a plan. It's a plan of genocide. Means you do away with the people and you do away with everything that is holy to them. Now I'm going to continue. We're in darkness. I want you to think about that as we listen to the song of the day. It's a very special song that I picked out today. And I'm going to explain to you the background on it after you hear it. Here's Rafi.
One light, one sun lighting everyone. One world turning everyone. One world, one home, one world home for everyone. One dream, one song heard by everyone.
That is Rafi doing One Light, One Sun. Yes, the children's entertainer, Rafi. Our kids grew up to his music, 1980s, early 1990s. Yeah, he's still around. He's still around, and I've seen documentaries, short documentaries done about him. He was on Sunday Morning a couple months ago, I think, if I remember right. Maybe it was last year. Small little mini documentaries about some of the work that he's doing. He's championing environmental issues and so on. But anyway, this was off of one of his earlier albums that our kids would just love. And today, honestly, I was going to play for you Zartir Lau, which is a revolutionary song about wake up because the evil is coming. And it was re-recorded recently by a heavy metal band called Adana. And the recording really shook me. I loved it. And I was going to play it for you today. You know, I'm kind of giving you a hint what to expect next week. I don't know, maybe we will. But I will put a link to Adana's recording on today's show notes, okay? Do look in today's show notes and check out. It's visual as much as it is musical. But everything changed this morning. My grandson came for the day, and Susan put on this album of, it's off of an album, Rafi Sings to the World. And this song was playing when I went in to see my grandson. He's not even 11 months, 10 months, 10 and a half months. And he was just playing with toys, the innocence, and to hear these words, to hear this song, just, I realized that this is what we needed. This is what I needed today. And I wanted to share it with you today. In the midst of all the tragedy that's going on, we need to know that there is one light and one sun. And actually, the second portion of today's show, we're going to be talking about that one light. Okay? So, as a prelude to that, but I wanted to share this song with you today. It did my heart's wonders this morning in the midst of all of this tragic news that we're getting. You've got to have a bit of hope. And I think that's what this song did for me. And more so that my grandson was playing and absorbing it and really being taken away by the moment he took me away in that moment as well. Rafi doing One Light, One Sun.
There's a haze on the skyline there to wish me on my way. And there's a note on the telephone, some roses on a tree. And the motorway stretching right out to us all.
You know, as Jesus was praying in the Garden of Gethsemane, I always think about light and darkness. I always, whenever I meditate on this particular scene in Christ's life, of him leaving his friends, his loved ones at the Last Supper, and going into the Garden of Gethsemane to pray to his Father, it is the Lord's Prayer at that moment. And there's also something else. It's the total willingness and relief to God's will, because that's the point of no return. You see, at the Last Supper, he tells Judas, go ahead, do what you want. Get out and do what you have to do. And Judas leaves to betray Jesus. And in a sense, Jesus knows what's coming up. But it's in the garden that he hits that point of no return. Thy will be done. Take this cup away from me, but now at this point, thy will be done. So all of a sudden, you're in the darkness. You're with your friends. You have this light. You are the light of the world. He is the light of the world. He's illuminating their light. And now Judas prefers the darkness, and he takes it and he walks into the darkness. And so do we. We're now in the Garden of Gethsemane, And what is it? It's in the shadows. It's dark. It's dark because in the dark, evil can get away with what it wants to. Okay? It's that contrast, the contrast of light and dark. And in between, what do you have? You have shadows. You have shadows where the light is hitting, and there's shadows. This garden is the place of the shadows. And that point of no return is when Jesus says, "Thy will be done." What is that point of no return? You ever taken a roller coaster ride? You know, you go and there's a certain point. I mean, you know, once it starts, that's the point of no return, actually. Because you really can't really stop the motion. But really, you have a choice. You can really yell and scream when you're way up at the top, because you are under the control of the mechanism of the roller coaster. You can yell and scream, and you can maybe get somebody to come and stop it, right? And say, "I'm sorry, I cannot go through with this." But once it peaks over that top, that's the point of no return. You are in free fall. You're in free fall. There's no mechanism. It's just gravity in you, and it's just like pulling you through the whole thing. And you got to get used to the idea that you're going to go through the rest of it. And that's that moment of no return, where evil seems to have won out in the Garden of Gethsemane. "Thy will be done." And from then on, you just see evil over and over and over. Now, you know, we as Armenians, we have these beautiful poems. We have beautiful songs that inspire us. One of them is Kicheng Sagan Hayeng. "We are few, but nevertheless we are Armenian." And in it, Barut Sevag, prolific Armenian poet, spells it out that, you know, get used to the idea that we are these peaceful, loving people that on top of everything somehow have been picked out to die. And he uses this word barzabes, which means plainly we are this. Plainly we are this. And, you know, I think to myself as I read through that poem that we need to add one more stanza to it, that barzabes, or plainly, there is evil in the world, and that evil has always come down on us. And when you think about it, look at what is that evil? Think about it in your own life. Think about it in the life of our church. We identify evil by seven main categories, which we call the seven deadly sins, namely by pride, envy, anger, sloth, covetousness, gluttony, and lust, right? This is how we refer to sin, right? With the sevenfold transgressions of the deadly sins. And we have beautiful ways of articulating this as well, right? But think about when these come about. They come about in the darkness. And when you amplify it on a bigger scale, what is Turkey doing? What is the sin that Turkey is doing? Every one of these. Habardutyun, pride. What pride do they have that somehow they can say what will happen to another group of people? Envy, envious. Gluttony, wanting more than you have. You've taken away all that land, wanting still more. Having that lust, wanting that lust, wanting more. The laziness of not being able to do it, so you go and you just take it. I mean, every one of the sins applies on a grander scale to what the Turks are doing. And that's the darkness that we're living in. That's where that darkness comes from. And that's what the darkness facilitates. That's the word, facilitates. That's what darkness does. It facilitates the evil. And so now what do we do? Are we really helpless against that darkness? Are we helpless against what's going on, whether in Gethsemane or going on today in the Garden of Artsakh? Are we helpless? No, you're not. You're not. That's what the message of Christ is all about. "I am the light of the world," says Christ. And if you follow, if you live in that light, you will not live in that darkness. And what does he do? He transforms his message of saying, "I am the light of the world," to you. He says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do you light a lamp and put it under a basket, but instead you put it on a lampstand so that it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. Pure and simple. In other words, don't stay in that darkness. Get out of that darkness. And that's the commandment that we have. So don't stay in that darkness means you need to do something. You cannot just sit idly by. It means that you can't just sit there and say, well, you know, I'm going to turn it over to God and let God do it. No, you are part of that. You have to, just as darkness facilitates the evil, you have to be the agent of light because Jesus has said, you are the light of the world. Therefore, let's light up the world. You get it? It's like, yes, you don't have to be helpless. Light up the world. And you think about, well, what can we do? Well, think about what he says, Jesus's, his words that cannot lie, right? He says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are you, the pure in heart, for you shall see God. Can you be pure of heart? Yes, we can do that. Well, what does that mean? Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Okay, peacemaker. I could grasp that. I've got to bring peace. I've got to do something for peace. And then he goes and he says, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Okay, there it is. Black and white. You've got it spelled out. Jesus says, you are the agent of change. You need to be there. You need to be actively involved in this. Otherwise, the darkness will always be there. So light it up. So let's light it up. Let's take these to heart. Let's just not pretend that it's just something that we do on Sundays. We've wound up our faith on Sundays because we go to church and we light a candle and we say a prayer. No, this is our battle right now. And God is with us. If God is with us, let's shine that light. Let's shine it in all that we do. Think about it. Truth, righteousness, these are on our side. When it comes to Artsakh, the truth and righteousness is on our side. There isn't any other side. It's that plain and simple. There is no evil side. If you try and you really try and you go listen to what the Turks are saying, it doesn't even make sense. Forget about what they're trying to claim. There isn't any sense in it. So you're just living in your own peaceful home, and then one day you decide to wage war against a power that has, you know, five times, six times, what is the number? I think all of Armenia has some like 2 million people in it, and Azerbaijan has some like 10 million in it, 20 million. So just Artsakh, this small little area, one day decides, hey, let's go and pick on this big bully over there. Doesn't even make sense. 2 years ago, it doesn't make sense. 2 years ago, the people of Artsakh said, let's help them construct this mosque so that they can have a place to come and worship over here. I mean, that's peace. That's saying like, here, come and do it. Doesn't even make sense. Azeris stockpiling weapons and having all these weapons right on that field doesn't even make sense, right? How about Artsakh itself? Walk in there and there are no traces that Azerbaijan ever owned it. Instead, you have, yeah, okay, let's, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional, I told you. Doesn't even make sense, which means we're going to look at it logically, okay? So let's assume that what they're saying is correct. It belonged to Azerbaijan. So Azerbaijanis, who are Muslim, decided back in the 6th century, 7th century, to build Armenian churches and monasteries and have them written in Armenian. What? Wait. There were no Azerbaijanis then. But there's these structures. There's these monuments to faith. Okay, so the logic isn't even there. So let's get out there. And this is the call that we have today. There's no other call that's greater. There's no other call that's holier right now. The first Christian nation is in need of our help. The first Christian nation is us. The first Christian nation is calling all of us to stand up and share that light of Christ. And in that light, the evil cannot do its work. You see how it works? It's pretty easy. Turn on the light and you can't do the evil, because the evil needs the darkness so that people can't see. And they've got the darkness right now. They've got the darkness. They've got a beautiful world that is consumed with coronavirus. Here in the United States, they're consumed because the president got coronavirus, and they're consumed whether he's going to wear a mask or not. And they have debates. This is remarkable. Yes, they have debates whether it's right or wrong, and they're talking about the mask and everything. And meanwhile, people are dying in Artsakh, but yeah, they're talking about it. And last night, speaking of debate, they had a debate for the vice president. And it was interesting. I watched it because I'm a registered voter here in America, and I take my voting privilege as sacred, and I want to make an educated choice. Even though I have already decided, I still went ahead and watched it, as did millions of other people. And the takeaway of that, a fly landed on Vice President Trump's hair. That's what everybody is talking about this morning. This fly landed on his hair. And you have the laugh track, and you have people making jokes about it, and you've got your comedians and late night television talking about the fly and what flies sit on and stuff like that. And you go, what? Wait, where is the level? Well, that's the darkness. That's the darkness, and the darkness is going to rule, is going to facilitate the evil, which will rule in the darkness. So let's bring light to it. And if you've got a pen, you've got to write. If you've got a voice, you've got to talk. If you've got legs, you've got to walk. And if you've got money, you've got to give. And if you don't have money, you've got to even give then too. You know, it's like really wild to me when you think about the things that people do without money. They buy houses. They buy cars. They buy vacations. They buy recreation. They buy fun. All kinds of things. And they charge it. Well, this is one of those things that you got to charge, because this is not only a question of survival, it's a question of genocide. And everything you have needs to go against this evil that is taking place in this world. It's that plain and simple. There is Barzabas. There is evil in the world. And you need to be able to be an agent against that. You know, last Saturday night, they closed down the freeway. A group of Armenian young people. I was so proud of them. It was one of the major freeways, the Hollywood Freeway, the 101, that goes right through the Los Angeles Valley to downtown. They just went in there and they stopped the traffic. And people complained and complained, and I heard it too. And I wasn't standing in there. I might have complained if I was in there until I saw who was doing it. But you know what? You need to get the word out. Nobody knows about this. Why? Because it's in the darkness, right? So you've got to go out there and shine some light on it. You've got to do something about it. You've got to go and make some noise. And sometimes that way of making noise is not to everybody's liking. But you know what? It'll get attention. The words of Sardarabad, it's a beautiful song about the last battle that we had, 1918. Sardarabad, again, Barud Sevag wrote the words to that song. It's saying, when there is no more way of dealing with anything, who are the people that find a way of overcoming that evil? It's the crazies. And you've got to be crazy. You've got to think outside of the box. That's what that craziness is. And if you have to stop a freeway to get some attention, that's what it's going to come down to. That's what it's going to come down to, because people have to realize that this is no, we're no longer living in this closed society where these evils can get away. Yes, I shared with you last few weeks where we used to be on the road towards globalism where everything was going to be open. Now, no, we're back into this nationalism, patriotism, and we don't care about other people. America, this huge superpower, which used to be morally responsible when things were happening out there, refuses to talk about, refuses to get involved in something that their ally, supposed quote-unquote ally, Turkey, is doing. There's something wrong with this system, so let's get out there. Let's make some noise. Let's make some, bring some light. And that's why I said earlier, yeah, if you have the means, you know, if you write, get out there. But sit in front of your computer and write about it. If you talk, talk about it. And if you've got arms, you've got to write a check. If you don't have arms, use your nose and go on the website and punch in your number and give the money. I remember a good friend of mine, Hagop Stepanyan, he passed away just a couple years ago. And one of the things I'll never, ever, ever forget about him, and it's a bit of light that I want to share with you today. When we were building the St. Andrew Church, and it was during some very difficult times in the 1980s in Cupertino, and I had put out the first call for donations, and Hagop had a family of three children. He's taking care of his wife and his mother-in-law, and he came by with a $5,000 gift. I'll never forget this. I even remember the amount. The $5,000 in those days, yeah, it was sizable. It is today. I wouldn't mind having that either. But it was a good gift, you know. And I knew his conditions, and I said, Hagop, you know, I know you're raising family and everything. And he said that don't argue with me. He says, I would take out a loan to go on a vacation. I went and I took out a loan to help my church, to support my church. I'll never forget that. Yeah, that's what it's for. It's you've got the money, you've got to use it. And he had the credit, so he went ahead and he used it. And you know what? He's passed away. I remember him. He'll never die. He'll never, ever die, because we have this beautiful memory of him. It's a memory of love and expression of that love. So I wanted to share that with you too. Don't be scared at this moment in history. This is a moment that is like none other. It is a very special moment in the history of not only the Armenians, but of the world, because we have a chance to stop genocide. Imagine that. We have it in our power to stop genocide. Imagine being around in 1914 before the Armenian Genocide. Imagine being around in 1930 before the Jewish Holocaust began, or the motions began for that, right? Imagine being there. Well, you don't have to. You are there. You have a chance to change this. Let's make it work. Let's shine that light. And I told you, this is into politics. I told you, if you're listening to the next step, you're going to get something that comes out of our spirit, out of our teaching, out of our church. And that's the teaching of the church. Spread your light. Let your light shine upon men so that they see the good works that you do. God bless you. Do those good works. I'm going to take a little break right now. Here's Susie to make an announcement. I'll be back in a couple moments to wind it up.
Susie here again, popping in to say thank you to you, our listeners. We are thankful for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. We are grateful to be able to touch so many lives and create lasting friendships. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world and look forward to your continued support. Thank you and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you, all of you listeners, for your prayers. Right now, I'm not going to make any other announcement except what I said earlier. It's a time like no other. It's a time for us to all take our responsibility seriously and make a decision to back the effort, the resistance effort. Get out there and call, the ANC, the Armenian National Committee of America, the Armenian Assembly. They both have great resources that you could tap into from their websites to let congressional people know, to let politicians know. I personally did all that. I don't have much faith in these politicians, especially when you see what they're up to and the partyism that goes on with them. But do it. You got to do it. It's better than doing nothing. But I think bigger than that is really to pray. And when you pray, you start realizing thy will be done means that the goodness has to be done. When you pray, you start understanding that you are an agent for that change. You are involved. You have a responsibility to do something. And this is what it comes down to today. We are here, and I appreciate all of your love and your support. And I'm going to ask that you focus in today on Artsakh. Let's focus in all of our efforts to bring a peace, and that lasting peace, which will come only through God. That lasting peace will not come through the political ways. It'll come for a while. It'll come certainly for a little bit, like it did in 1994. But that lasting peace requires that all of us start leveraging that love. And I mean that. That's a bigger challenge. And one that I hope that after all these things quiet down, we can take a little bit more seriously and really promote at the level that it needs to be promoted. So I'll leave you with that. I appreciate you joining us today. Let's see, this Sunday I will be at in Rancho Mirage. That's out in the desert. On the 18th, we have a pilgrimage taking the deacons to Yetem, California. So that's it for the next few weeks. I'll have links today on the show notes to things we talked about as well as things that we didn't talk about. On behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Voskin, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Daddy, old man, you failed in a trap.